Chapter 16, Making Our Potholes Less Bumpy. The 10th of November produced the season's second snowfall. Not just flurries, either. It began mid-morning and continued through the afternoon, a powdery cascade sifting down through still air. It was as though Mother Nature's cat had knocked the talcum powder off her vanity. By 10 p.m. it was still coming down, and I was shuffling through the fluffy white stuff as I crossed South Field to attend my rescheduled evening appointment with Professor Hopkins. We were meeting this time at his office in Hambleton Hall. The day after he had failed to show up for our previous appointment, he had sent me a note of apology and rescheduled, but hadn't offered any explanation for why he had been absent. My mind wasn't dwelling on this, however. It was going over two notes which I'd just picked up from my mailbox. One was from the Office of Alumni Affairs, the other from the Dean's office. Naturally, I put off opening the Dean's. The envelope from Alumni Affairs contained an embossed invitation to attend a private dinner with a Hugh Blackwell at the Columbia Club on the 21st of November, 7 p.m., RSVP. A personalized note was attached by a gold paperclip. In fountain pen blue ink and with a somewhat shaky scrawl was written, "Parker, sorry it's so close to Thanksgiving. Hope you can make it. Hugh Blackwell." A separate printed insert informed me that Dr. Hugh Blackwell was a Gold Lion recipient, holder of many honorary degrees, vice president of the Alumni Association, and at-large member of the College Fund Committee, as well as a graduate of a class 57 years ahead of mine. The note from Dean Simmons was in reference to the invitation. Its message was succinct. "Mr. Robinson, you have a chance to redeem yourself. Attendance is mandatory or you won't graduate. Be on your best behavior. Dean Simmons." I stuffed both letters in my coat pocket, intending to show them to Professor Hopkins. When he answered my knock at his top-floor office door, I could tell right away that my assigned faculty advisor was a good bit under the weather. With slurring speech, he greeted me.
"Parker, my boy, good to see you. Look at you, you're all snowy. Come in, take your coat off. Let me have it."
He insisted on taking my pea coat and hanging it up himself. Motor skills lacking, he ended up hanging it not by the collar loop, but by an armpit. His office always contained a mountain range of stacks of papers and books. On his desk, a quarter-full tumbler of amber liquid was sitting on his desk blotter, with other similar-sized wet rings around it, indicating that glass had already been picked up and put down numerous times. Behind him, the neck of an empty whiskey bottle peeked up out of his wastebasket. He said,
"I'd offer to let you join me, but your file tells me you're on prohibition."
"Probation."
"Whatever. I probably shouldn't be this drunk to act in my official capacity as your advisor. But you'll forgive me. You don't pay any attention to what I have to say anyway."
"That's not true, Professor." He leaned back too hard in his swivel chair, which sent it rolling backwards. He then scooched forward again, saying,
"I better get my seatbelt fastened."
"What are we celebrating, Professor?"
"The answer to that, old buddy, old pal of mine, is something... Here, let me put it this way. You don't want to know, and I don't want to tell you. Besides, we're not here to gaze into anybody's crystal ball but yours. Parker Allen Robinson. Say, Any relation to Edward G. Robinson? Didn't he go here?
You're thinking of Jimmy Cagney.
Oh, yes, so I am.
He took off his glasses, pinched the bridge of his nose, and shut his eyes. I asked, "You sure you're all right, Professor?" He waved off the question.
Tell me about you now. At least the part I haven't been reading about in the papers. Not arrested again, have you been?
No.
No more unauthorized sabbaticals to tropical climes, I presume?
No, sir.
No more unauthorized studies abroad?
No, sir.
You know, I've had several people contact me about you since you became a celebrity. Mostly media people wanting to know about your homicidal tendencies.
He clinked his teeth against his glass while trying to take another swallow. I asked him, "Professor, are you sure you're still thirsty?" He stared at me for several seconds, then said,
"Barker, why is it when I look at you, I have the feeling you are somebody about whom I'm going to have to be giving interviews for a very long time? You better tell me what your plans are and aspirations, so I'll know what to tell your biographers when they come calling."
"They won't."
"Don't be too sure of that, my boy. Never be too sure of that."
I tried to cooperate by launching into a sketchy outline of my future as I envisioned it so far. But almost immediately his concentration wavered, and I could see he was drifting off. He tried to retrieve it by interrupting me with a question, the nature of which demonstrated that he hadn't really been paying attention. This was all the alcohol's doing. Professor Hopkins was normally one of those rare adults who, when they pose a question to a youthful supplicant, actually pay close attention to what he's saying and wait for a full reply. At last his attentiveness veered off the rails entirely, and he sank into a quagmire of moroseness that he failed to recover from, even after I had ceased talking. He seemed to forget I was even in the room. Suddenly he began again.
Sorry. Sorry, start over.
Professor, it's cold out and snowing, and you are in no condition. How about if you let me walk you home, and you can keep advising me on the way?